The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Summer's coming to an end up here in northern Abya. The fall semester of school is about to start. So this week, I'm joined by a good friend.
My name is Dale Skye Jones, and I'm the chancellor for Oaksterdam University. We have taught over 100,000 souls from 116 countries about cannabis. Everything from knowing your rights and how to change the law in your neck of the woods through how to successfully cultivate cannabis for both personal, medical, and adult use. We've taught people how to go into business for themselves and specialize in teaching small businesses how to start up, as well as workforce development and technical assistance for several governments. We've also taught a lot of regulators and academics, as well as expert practitioners that are now in the industry, many of whom got their start in Oaksterdam. We were founded back in 2007 by some pioneers that were first on the scene, trying to supply, well, not trying, but doing, supplying cannabis to folks here locally in the Bay Area. And Oaksterdam was formalized to teach other folks how to be successful and, importantly, how to be civically engaged so that when you do well, you know how to do good, how to move this issue forward and advocate for your business and your freedoms.
In addition to your role there at Oaksterdam, you're a seasoned activist. You're also a well-educated and highly skilled professional. But why on earth did you get involved in the politics of pot?
Accidentally and against my will. I often felt like I was just through the looking glass. I was trying to climb the ladder in corporate America, predominantly in hospitality. And that's what gave me so much experience going into the cannabis industry, was understanding, not from soup to nuts. I worked for Broadline Distribution, one of the largest in the nation, with over 10,000 different line items that supplied everything from the local sheriff and full service restaurants to hotels and convenience stores, pretty much anything that had food or needed to serve anything or clean anything afterwards. But I also owned a restaurant. I worked in restaurants and worked my way up in restaurants and opened them corporately for folks like TGI Fridays and Roadhouse Grill, and just really understood deeply from the front of the house to the back of the house, all the way through the corporate boardrooms that were determining the very products that hit the market, and working for a research company with folks like Procter & Gamble and Starbucks for a giant coffee study that discovered an illicit market around the coffee supply, the global coffee supply. Like, it was really remarkable how all those years in restaurants and hotels and hospitality prepared me for the supply chain of what would be required as well for health and human safety, that it wasn't going to be cannabis that made people sick. It was going to be improper handling, improper storage, and frankly, people not washing their hands after they go poo. That is what was going to make people sick. And so how can we both self-regulate, but teach other people how to do this well so that when someone consumes cannabis, they have the experience that they want? If it's a patient, that it is, you know, grown with, you know, medicinally, that we're not using pesticides, that we're thoughtful about not just how we're growing and what we're growing with, but also, you know, how we're consuming it, different methods of ingestion. And so it's really, I got into it, going back to that whole corporate America thing. I had worked with doctors for a while, and worked as well in retail. And after 5 years with the second largest shoe company in the world, Brown Shoe, I just watched a corporation, a good company, making decisions about its people, and watching folks that had been doing it 25 years just kind of get waysided and left behind in ways that were just offensive. They didn't appreciate good hard work. And I just thought, like, what am I doing here? I climbed the corporate ladder and I'm looking around as a district manager not liking the view, not liking what I was doing. And the only joy I took was in developing people and being the corporate trainer and the manager of people. And a friend of mine from Wyoming kept talking me into, hey, we've got these doctors down in California. I was living in Seattle after leaving Wyoming, and talked me into going to manage these doctors who are trying to help medical cannabis patients in, of all places, Orange County, California. Not a friendly, the unfriendliest of places for cannabis in the day. Roving task forces trying to bust doctors doing medical recommendations, because that was the, you know, the if we can take the doctors out, then the patients won't have access. And so I moved in 2007. I gave up my corporate career and the freaking like retirement package I had finally earned and 3 weeks vacation to go help these doctors and help patients. And I realized after helping these patients and learning from them and learning about their experiences, this wasn't just about protecting patients, it was about protecting people. That this was a really critical, like, social justice problem and a criminal justice issue. That it wasn't about patients, it was Black, Brown, and Indigenous people that were getting busted for this, especially when they were patients. And I had reached out looking for education for the doctors and patients, figuring, well, gosh, there's got to be like education around this. And I found, through Dale Gehringer of California Normal, he introduced me to Jeff Jones of the Patient ID Center, who had been doing education around this for years with patients and doctors. And so he's who introduced me to best practices that I could share with the doctors, as well as the laws for them to not break, how to stay safe with what we could and couldn't tell patients, and where to send patients so that they could ask him all the things that we couldn't tell them as a doctor's office. And predominantly where to find cannabis, because that would have been aiding and abetting a felony for the doctors I served. And so he let me know about this school that was starting up, this concept that his classes were going to start, you know, way bigger with his friend Richard Lee, starting in November of 2007. That was the fall that I'd met everybody that summer. And I was like, yes, sign me up. This is like, oh, hell yes. And after Jeff went up to the first one in Oakland, because I was in Southern California at the time talking to him out of LA, he told Richard, I can do this in Los Angeles in my office down there. And I volunteered at the first held in LA in February of 2008. And I couldn't work for it. They asked me if I would be a facilitator, and I said no, because I couldn't take any money. I would have been the nexus for the federal crime connecting the doctor to the dealer, right? So I volunteered, I made coffee, I helped. And on day two of this weekend seminar, the doctor, Dr. Bierman, I think, he was supposed to come teach. And he got lost somewhere in Compton and called and said, like, I'm not going to make it in time for class. And so the facilitator that they had found came running up to me, and she's like, do you work for a doctor's office? Do you think you could teach this class and just kind of show me the slides real quick? I'm like, actually, this is exactly what I talk to patients about all day. Yeah, I can teach that class. And that I was hooked, and also happened to be falling in love with Mr. Jones on the side.
You mentioned Richard Lee, Oaksterdam's founder, Richard Lee, you worked with for many years. He sadly passed away recently. And more than just the founder of Oaksterdam, Richard had a huge impact on drug policy reform in general and marijuana legalization in particular, and a lot more. Tell me about Richard Lee.
Richard changed the world. I'll start there. That if you enjoy cannabis on any level and you feel safe doing so, it's because of what Richard risked and succeeded in doing, by changing the conversation, by sparking the debate around the criminality of cannabis. And he viewed the war on drugs as a war on us. He saw this as a war, and that those that were struggling with him as fellow soldiers, that folks that were in prison and jail were prisoners of war, and that There were good people doing the hard work along with him. He helped to do their own thing. He was very much a do-it-yourselfer and a freedom fighter. I think freedom fighter is are the words.
This is my conversation with Dale Skye Jones, President and CEO of Oaksterdam University. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. I want to ask you more about Oaksterdam and some of the stuff that you're doing. Tell the listeners more about Oaksterdam University.
Oaksterdam University has really evolved and frankly reinvented ourselves over the years. We started out on campus, and the campuses, we actually moved campuses and got bigger and bigger to account for not just folks learning how to grow their own and be patients, but also, how to help others, how to become caregivers, and importantly, how to open businesses, dispensaries, and retail, delivery, transportation, as well as, of course, cultivation and manufacturing and extractions. And so at first it was the business of cannabis and a horticulture program that really got into the ins and outs from seed to sale. But importantly, not just how to cultivate cannabis, but cultivar selection all the way through ensuring that you're curing it properly. Now, with that, we've evolved to meet current times. And so we're online now. You don't have to come all the way to Oakland anymore. We come to you. We do everything from workforce development, frontline training, budtender training, and horticulture worker training, as well as more scientific. We really ramp up with the extractions and manufacturing certification course. And then we have management training for each of these different sectors as well. The business of cannabis and making sure that you know the ins and outs of operating agreements and getting licensed, avoiding predatory behavior. So our programs, we've been able to expand what we teach since we've gone online, but we've also been able to go much deeper into some of these subjects and work live with experts like James Loud on breeding. We can teach live on Zoom, and wherever you are on a telephone or a computer, you can just log in and you can always go back to the video for review. So it's whether you need that certification to get a job or a license, or you're just looking to be a lifelong learner. We also have a great program for home growers and regulators, as well as academics. So it's really who you are and what you need.
You're presenting workshops at this upcoming Patients at a Time National Clinical Conference in Charlottesville, Virginia. Tell me about those.
I am thrilled to get back in person, especially with such a trusted partner. The Patients at a Time conference, they're celebrating 25 years of bringing education specifically for healthcare professionals, nurses and doctors, and those that work with folks that consume and utilize cannabis medicinally, or just simply to understand the research and contraindications around the clinical applications. It's really a wonderful place to network and interact. And Oaksterdam is proud to be doing the pre-conference workshops. So in the morning, Mr. Jeff Jones, who's been teaching folks how to grow cannabis, both in your closet or commercially for 30 years now, he's going to be teaching a morning class on how to grow. And then I'll be teaching an afternoon class around just everything you need to know about different consumption methods and applications. It's kind of like a cannabis 101. So no matter who you are and what you're trying to do with it, it's a really excellent overview and basis. And to help you find your place in space, not just in the industry, but just simply adjacent to it. If whether you're trying to work with someone or work with another business in the industry, or just simply understand how to explain this to your mom or for your kid. What is this anyway? And how to not be afraid, especially with all the change that's happening nationally. So I hope to see folks in September in Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm excited.
I was debating whether to ask or not, and you mentioned parents, and you are a parent, And it for most parents, the big question is whether to admit or not whether they used weed or they still use weed. And for some, it's just like, well, we'll wait until it comes up and hope it never comes up, and it'll be years before it comes up. And you're the president and CEO of Oaksterdam University. That, as we say, that horse done bolted. So how did you handle the question?
Oh my God. When my little one pointed at a pot leaf that he saw when we were out and about one day, and he had just learned how to talk, and he said, "Look, Mom, it's an Oaksterdam leaf." Yeah, we were busted early on. There was no hiding who we were and what we did. And, you know, this is about responsible consumption, responsible use, responsible parenting. And I think that a lot of the difficulty that parents have goes back to how many of us were raised because of the war on drugs, because of prohibition, because of DARE. I was a DARE kid. I actually was one of the kids that helped teach DARE. So, you know, there was this very like deeply ensconced. And I remembered when I finally came in contact with cannabis, like, oh, that smells familiar. That was wafting out from under my mom's door. But she didn't talk to me about it. And when she caught me with it as a teenager, I got in a lot of trouble. And it wasn't until I was 21 that she smoked it with me. And I'm like, so you remember when I was in so much trouble, I threw up? She's like, yeah, you were 14. That was not okay. Now you're 21. Enjoy. And it was like, okay, that's responsible use. And especially these days, I am terrified as a parent of a 14-year-old, an almost 12-year-old, and an 8-year-old getting just a blink of an eye. They can get it off of Roblox. They can get it delivered to their door in a way that I never could. And when I say it, you know, those scare tactics from DARE 30 years ago, 40 years ago, they've unfortunately become true. One pill can kill you. It's frightening. And how many people are overdosing? It's not because these are junkies that can't stop. It's like hitting the smack here. These are just like normal people like you and me and our kids and our sisters and our parents and our friends. These are just normal people who take decongestant along with cold medicine, along with, you know, something their friend gave them. These are not criminals. These are not people that are dope fiends. These are kids that are experimenting and being told it's one thing and it is another. And fentanyl is what I'm most afraid of. So, and the next thing, the conversation I'm having and my husband is having with our kids is, please, no pills, no powders, just plants. And having that conversation early and having responsible use, just like, yes, somebody would have a beer or a glass of wine, but not become so stumbling drunk that they fall into the fireplace, that they keep the liquor in a cabinet, that you keep your prescription pills, especially opiates, not where your kids are going to find them and share them with their friends, because that's what's getting passed around in middle school right now. Cannabis is a harm reduction technique across multiple communities as an exit from opiates for veterans to exit from self-medicating with alcohol and cocaine and fentanyl and opioids and this is harm reduction for our communities and for our kids to legalize and make more accessible, safer drugs. And I'm not saying we should give kids cannabis unless they're a patient, but part of why some of these more dangerous drugs are so widely available is because we made it illegal. And if we don't at least recognize that reality, then we've also failed.
I want to get back to Oaksterdam for a minute, because we're getting close to the end of the half hour, and there's just a couple more questions I got about the stuff that you're doing. And one of that's the I want to ask you, and I wanted to ask you about this documentary, which I've not yet seen. I know it's doing the festival circuit. That's American Pot Story, Oaksterdam. What's up with the documentary? How long before we'll be able? Will this? When will this have a release? Yeah, what's up with that?
Great question. It is in the film festival circuit, and I must say, Doug, it doesn't suck. It's really good. I have been shocked at the reception. It's won over 75 awards in various film festivals around the world, and it tells the story of Oaksterdam in two parts. Part one is Richard Lee's endeavors to change the world and change the law. And my endeavors, both my accidental introduction to becoming a spokeswoman for that campaign and an educator for Oaksterdam, but importantly, what I did after the federal government knocked him down. He was who stood up when Jeff Jones with the Oakland Cannabis Buyers Cooperative was stopped by the Clinton administration. And so Richard carried that torch for many, many years and got really loud and really political. And when he was taken down by the Obama administration in 2012, I stood up and carried on and continued the mission of education and cannabis policy reform. You know, drop me behind enemy lines and I will only find friends. This is one of the issues that everyone can agree on, no matter what your political stripe, who you are, or where you're from. I can connect the dots for you of why the war on drugs has failed you and your family and what you care about.
You mentioned Prop 19, the legalization initiative that Richard largely sponsored. Tell me more about that, the impact that that had, because I mean, it didn't pass, but it moved the conversation to a higher level, and it made people think that this idea had potential. I think it gave, it may not have won, but I think it gave people hope. So tell me more about Prop 19.
It was the election heard around the world, and we had press and attention from civic leaders and elected officials in over 100 countries had press that came to Oaksterdam, and tens of thousands of articles were written about the failure of prohibition around Prop 19. And importantly, here in California, we never expected to win. Richard went, he proposed Prop 19 in 2009 and tried to get as many activists and, you know, policy wonks involved in writing a simple, straightforward control, tax, and regulate, legalize for adult use, allow home grow in, you know, a 5x5 area in California, in the fourth largest economy in the world. And that campaign that we wound up running attracted a coalition, including, you know, everything from the NAACP and changing hearts and minds of our Black and church leaders, all the way through the unions and labor. We had environmentalist groups coming out and talking about how the illegal grows were affecting and that we were criminalizing our youth. What we wound up doing was almost winning. We were coming in and polling at over 56% going into October. And what that triggered was fear in the hearts of both our federal and state leaders. And we wound up getting two October surprises as a gift. One was, well, frankly, the best gift. Governor Schwarzenegger had vetoed a Senate bill to decriminalize cannabis in California four times. And in order to take the legs out from under the Prop 19 campaign, he signed the bill and passed the largest, most effective decriminalization before or since. We had an 87% drop in criminalization in California the very next year, Doug. Let that sink in. That's nearly 9 out of 10 people not going to jail that night in the largest state with the largest amount of people getting criminalized around this. So we changed the conversation around criminalization and decriminalization in California there. The second thing that happened was every living drug czar and federal official, the LA sheriff, Lee Baca, who went to prison, all came out against us. The No On campaign had stars. The president of the No On campaign, the chairwoman rather, was our Senator Feinstein, the woman who wrote the ballot argument against the Prop 19 campaign, against control, tax, and regulation of cannabis, was none other than Kamala Harris. Governor Newsom was against us. No one was for this. And it changed the entire discussion around, well, first, the whole state was threatened that if we voted yes on Prop 19, that we would lose federal funding, that the federal government would start enforcement against California in a way that we couldn't. Basically, we would break off and fall into the ocean if we passed Prop 19, Doug. It was hellfire and damnation would rain upon our souls if we passed this. And it scared the hell out of the voters. And it scared them into not saying yes. And yeses, as we know, are harder to get than noes. But we did change the conversation. And that did become the blueprint, not just sparking the debate around the world and causing, like, the South American coalitions and Caribbean coalitions that started up saying, you know what, the drug war has failed us. And maybe we don't need to listen to the United States. Maybe we can break away from this failed policy and no longer enforce it. And it really changed the game across the board for medical cannabis patients and veterans that were trying to get safe access. It changed the game because you are taking the target off the backs of patients when you legalize for all adults. And that was why Jeff Jones and Richard Lee became co-proponents together for the first statewide campaign in over 30 years, the second Prop 19 campaign in California, just pure coincidence, to legalize cannabis. It was the first one, however, to be taken seriously. I think it's important, no matter who you are, to realize we're not done yet. And there's a lot afoot with federal changes. And we have to realize, like, this is going to roll out state by state, county by county, city by city, city council by city council, that you must be present to win. And understanding your place and space, whether you're part of the cannabis industry or you love someone who is, how to navigate the next steps. There are always opportunities to learn. And Oaksterdam has not only been tip of the spear on the cannabis policy reforms that we see today. And I just really want to shout out not just the team, the staff, the faculty of Oaksterdam, but our students and our alumni, because those 100,000 people that have graduated, that have gone back to their neck of the woods, their communities, and preach the gospel of cannabis, of how this is not the devil weed that we were lied to by our own government, and that this was not made illegal for the right reasons in the first place, that we don't need to legalize, we need to re-legalize cannabis and regulate cannabis like hemp, that we have won that battle and now we need to finish and finally release the cannabis prisoners as well. And whether you are in healthcare or legal or academics or just a community leader, that I would love to see you at Oaksterdam to learn more about how to make what you care about a little bit better.
That was my conversation with Dale Skye Jones, president and CEO of Oaksterdam University. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.